must oppose it. Thank you. God bless you. And may God somehow protect the land of the free, increasingly becoming only the home of the brave.
You've been listening to Viewpoint with Chuck Crismeyer. Viewpoint is supported by the faithful gift.
And he believed in pursuing
he was a Fabian. He was considered to be the greatest British philosopher of the last century. His books are still very available. They're out there. You can go to any bookstore and pick up the Bible and wrestle over about.
Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. And we'll be back here in just a moment to discuss the open lines which we're having this evening. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, that illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, and, well, for the next hour, they're going to be your views as well, because this is Open Line Wednesday, and we will welcome your calls at 1-888-24-LIBERTY, that's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. So just give us a call if you have something you'd like to talk about. Otherwise, we'll start out perhaps talking about the economy. We'll talk about the recent article in Rolling Stones magazine pointing out that so many of the people in key positions in government are affiliated with Goldman Sachs Bank. And, of course, certainly that was true of Robert Rubin, who was the CEO of Goldman Sachs, went on to become Secretary of the Treasury under Clinton, and then Henry Paulson, CEO of the Goldman Sachs, who went on to become Secretary of the Treasury under George Bush. And then, of course, we have Timothy Geithner, who is the current Secretary of the Treasury. And although he is not a member that didn't come from Goldman Sachs, his chief of staff, Mark Patterson, did come from Goldman Sachs. And you go down to the key people in government, they're all from Goldman Sachs. And, of course, his article in Rolling Stones magazine has created quite a furor. And a lot of people are saying, well, it's really government Sachs. Goldman Sachs controls the government. What people really don't understand is this is simply an effort to get you debating the wrong issue. And you can talk all you want to about Goldman Sachs, but they will never mention that the CEO of Goldman Sachs just happens to be one of the 87 American members of the Trilateral Commission, and the CEO of J.P. Morgan Chase, Jamie Dimon, was a member of the Trilateral Commission, and the CEO of Morgan Stanley and the CEO of Citigroup are all current members of the Trilateral Commission. And the Trilateral Commission, well, as we pointed out before, between 1976 and the year 2008, every president and or vice president of the United States came from the membership roles of the Trilateral Commission. And certainly the major banks and the Trilateral Commission and the government and the heads of many of our major corporations are simply one. They're dedicated to the establishment of a one-world government and the destruction of the American economy. And as you begin looking at what's going on today, you really can't understand that a lot of things just don't make sense. If you're watching the money supply, you'll find that M2 has been down dramatically recently. You would think they'd be expanding as they were really trying to get the economy going. They're not. Why are the major banks refusing to take the IOUs of the state of California? They want to collapse this economy here. Our number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Well, this is Dr. Stan. We got off to sort of a rocky start there at the beginning of the program. If you're out there in the listening audience, we'd love to hear from you. Our number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295 here in the Central Coast of California. And we're going to have open lines this evening. We'd like to hear from you, the things that you are concerned about. But right now, I would simply like to point out that the unemployment rate keeps rising. Now, they keep telling us, oh, things are getting better, but things are not going to get better until there start being new jobs. We have, according to the government, 9.5% unemployment. Now, that is known as the U2 unemployment. And you have to understand they use these figures because they figure most people are too dumb to understand what they're talking about. Then they have the U6 unemployment, which they will acknowledge is 16.5%. So what's U2 unemployment? Well, U2 unemployment are the people who are underemployed. In other words, they've had to take jobs with much lower salaries or they've simply given up looking for work. And even the Bureau of Labor Statistics will admit that we have 16.5% U6 unemployment. But certainly if you go to other people, there are a number of very good research groups. One of them, a major university base, says that the U6 figures are really 18.5%. Shadow Statistics, John Williams, says that the U6 figures are really 20.5%. We're talking about 14 million Americans who are out of work today, and the figure is only going to continue rising. Why is it going to continue rising? Because, of course, this whole economic contraction is contrived. How is it contrived? Very, very simply, the major banks have lots of money, and they refuse to lend it. In fact, the Goldman Sachs is going to be paying $20 billion in bonuses to its employees for the fine work they're doing this year. They're planning on bonuses of $20 billion for the employees of Goldman Sachs and similar numbers, perhaps two-thirds of that for J.P. Morgan Chase. Why are they giving them all this money? Well, very, very simply, because they're doing what they're supposed to do. They're in the process of destroying the economy of our nation. And when you understand that, you can begin to understand what's really going on today. But why would they want to destroy the value of our nation? Why are they doing exactly the same thing today that the big banks did under the regime of Andrew Jackson back in the 1830s? And we'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and certainly this is Open Line Wednesday. We look forward to your calls, and give us a call at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And, of course, most Americans, really, if they have their jobs, why, they're doing all right. But there's certainly an awful lot of people working for government are finding they're going to have to either cut back on the number of days' work, in other words, cut back on their income. And a lot of state and municipal government employees here in California are looking at a 10 to 15% reduction in their pay. The number of days they're going to have to take off every month is going to cut back on their income. But suddenly the municipalities don't have the money. Why don't the municipalities have the money? Well, very simply, because their tax receipts are down. The value of the homes, which they depend on a great deal for the tax base, why if the value of the homes is falling? Many people are asking to have their homes reappraised. And when they're reappraised, why they either have to refund or home taxes, property taxes, or suddenly go ahead and reduce property taxes for next year. So incomes, certainly, in the municipalities are being cut here in California. The state government wants to withhold the money ordinarily would be given to local municipalities from gas tax and other taxes. And, well, the state says, look, we need the money. We have to have the money. We'll pay you back in 3 years, but is there any guarantee things are going to be any better in 3 years? Well, we're supposed to believe that. The state of California now is issuing IOUs. And as I pointed out during the break, why, of course, the major banks here in California are refusing to take them. Why are they refusing to take them? Because they want to precipitate a crisis, but they can't tell the public that. This is a replay of what has happened time and time again when the major banks, in concert with what I call the Brotherhood of Darkness, have restricted credit. In other words, they won't lend money, have called in loans, and in some places I'm sure they're going to start calling in loans before long, but right now they've cut lines of credit for many businesses, and businesses without credit, they have to borrow money to operate, and of course they're being cut off from their credit. And that's one reason why more and more businesses are going out of work and out of business. And then, of course, when they go out of business, more and more people lose their jobs. We have 14.5 million Americans unemployed today, with an acknowledged 9.5% unemployment, and it's going to continue rising this year and next year, and we're in for a difficult time. During the first quarter of this year, approximately 844,000 people lost their homes by the end of the second quarter, which ended in June. Close between 1.7 and 1.8 million Americans have lost their homes so far this year, and it's just going to get worse. And people don't understand. The government could have remedied this whole situation. It has come up with all of these programs, and aw shucks, none of them seem to work. The hope for homeowners that was supposed to help 400,000 homeowners ended up helping one homeowner. The next program was supposed to help 5 million homeowners. It may have helped about 80,000 homeowners, but of course the lenders don't want. They're offering the lenders $1,000 if they'll just write off a large part of the money that's owed them, and the lenders aren't going to do that, and they know that is going on. But they have to give the impression that they're trying to solve the problem, which they're not doing. Well, right now we've got John calling from Texas, and again our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. If you have a question or you have something you'd like to comment on, why, give us a call. But let's go to John right now. Hi, John. How are you doing?
Not too bad. The other day I was listening to a thing on the radio, and I think it was Christian radio, but anyway, they were talking about Western Union, and they were saying that the illegals were sending all this money back home, and they're saying now that there's more transactions where all this money is going back over here from there. And what they suggested is how they were making all this money over here and sending it over there for their retirement. You know, and they were putting all the money in a bank or something like that.
You're saying that the illegal immigrants here in the United States are taking the money they're earning and sending it back to their homes in South America. Is that it?
Right. You know. And
all right, but not only that, Sean, but what's even more incredible is we're allowing them to, to receive Social Security payments from us. And they know these people are illegal, and they know that many of them are using fraudulent Social Security numbers, and yet we have an agreement with the government of Mexico that when these people reach retirement age, that we will pay out of our Social Security fund. Of course, we really don't have any fund. It's all been spent. The only thing in the Social Security fund is a bunch of IOUs from a bankrupt government, and that's our federal government. It doesn't have any money. It's having to borrow money. every month to pay its bills. Somewhere, well, in the past it's been between $2 and $3 billion. Heaven only knows how much it is today, but we're not only allowing the people to come in here and take jobs and work illegally. And of course, we make a fuss about it every once in a while, but we haven't ever tried to seal the borders. We've actually done everything we could to encourage illegal immigration, and now, of course, they're sending their money out of this country rather than having it used here. But in addition to that, we're going to allow them to receive Social Security funds. Can you believe that?
Well, they say that what this woman was saying, it that if they went back home and had money, you know, to live on in their own countries, that that'd be good and make it better for us over here with our jobs. And anyway, what they said at the end is that Obama has proposed to give them all amnesty to keep them all here.
Yeah, they really want to give amnesty to all the, they say there are about 12 million illegal immigrants in this country. Some people say there may be 20 million. Some people say there may be as many as 30 million illegal immigrants in this country. I know very well what I call AT&T, and I want to speak to somebody about our phone bill. The first thing they say is, do you want your message in English or in Spanish? And this is so true with so many of our major corporations, but they are all tied into the Brotherhood of Darkness, the Council on Foreign Relations, and their real goal is to create a multicultural, multilingual society to destroy the sovereignty of our nation, and of course to merge us into a one-world government. And that's why for years they have fought any efforts to make English the official language of our country. That's why they have steadfastly refused to obey the law and guard and secure our borders, which they could easily have done. They were by law required to build a fence, but they don't believe, of course, in the law. They have their own law. And they feel that they have a higher calling. They want to transform this whole world society to raise the living standards in other nations and to lower living standards here. When you understand that, John, it all makes sense.
Yeah, well, I thought it was pretty interesting that was the deal with Western Union, that the money is coming back this way to help people over here live. And then, like I say, she was saying, well, you know, if they got money at home, they can go home and live and do better. And then they threw that thing at the end where Obama, you know, proposed to give them all amnesty. But you know how the news is. It's like all this Michael Jackson and all this other stuff going on, and the news hadn't even reported none of this stuff, you know.
Well, John, the whole purpose of the news is not to reveal the truth, but to conceal the truth from the American people, to keep us centered on Michael Jackson and Britney Spears and Madonna and Paris Hilton and all of these issues, but not to talk about the important issues. I mean, I turn on my computer and immediately flashes up on the screen some partially clad woman with very, very well endowed woman, you know, it's really sort of a distraction. It happens routinely. Where in the world do they get right to come into my home with, frankly, pornographic pictures that flash up on the screen without my consent and knowledge? And, of course, what they really want to do is destroy the morality of this country. That's why so much is going on, and not only the Internet. Frankly, pornography in our schools, the sex education programs they're teaching our children are frank pornography, their child, you know, suddenly endangerment, and yet there's no outcry. They start their sex education in kindergarten. Our children know far more about sex than they do about Shakespeare, far more about Madonna than they do about mathematics. They're intentionally dumbing down our children, and it's all part of this effort to destroy the infrastructure of our country. They know exactly what they're doing, but they just don't want the American people to know. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. But John, that's why I do what I do, to try to get people to understand that there really is a brotherhood of darkness out there. There really are people who have a different agenda, who are working at the highest levels of our government, not to preserve our freedom, but to destroy our freedom, to appoint czars. We have more czars in America today running our economy under the Obama administration than the Romanovs had when they had their monarchy in Russia. And basically, you know, but remember that Obama is simply a front for these people of great wealth. They put him in there so that everybody will focus on Obama rather than the people who controlled him, who finance him, who surround him. This is the great problem. What they do is divert us from the real problem onto imaginary problems.
Yeah, well, anyway, I just thought I would say that, and I was kind of thinking before I called you up, you know, is that I think that, you know, just matter there's so few outlets of information, you know, it's a matter of people, you know, focusing in and just being pretty simple and presenting the stuff.
And well, this is what we do, John. We're trying to teach you and others how to be able to present this, where you can document the things that we talk about. People have to begin to look behind the veil, because there really are secret organizations out there. They hide their emblems on plain sight, like on the back of the dollar bill.
Yeah. Okay, well, you take it easy.
All right, John. Thank you very much, and appreciate your call. Yeah. Okay, and once again, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or...
Gold and silver is tremendously undervalued. Global demand vastly exceeds mine supply by more than 60% annually. There is little in the financial world more certain than a coming explosion in the prices of gold and silver. The U.S. dollar continues to lose value and respect as the world's reserve currency. Our nation faces challenges on many fronts, and a day doesn't pass without another economist bringing forth warnings of impending economic calamity. There has never been a better time than right now to acquire physical gold and silver. Discount Gold and Silver Trading was founded on the principles of truth and honesty. We believe in providing a quality product, quality service, and most importantly, competitive pricing. We provide all forms of precious metals, including American gold, silver, platinum, and rare investment and circulated coins. Silver bars, rounds, and 90% silver bags are on hand for the silver investor. Gold self-directed IRAs are available. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. Toll free, that's 1-800-375-4188.
Most Americans are iodine deficient today because they stopped adding iodine to our milk and to our flour, and only about half of the salt that's consumed in the United States today contains iodine. So Radio Liberty has produced a 4-tape or a 4-CD set that discusses the health benefits of iodine. We also offer iodorol. It contains 12.5 milligrams of iodine per tablet. And we also offer potassium iodide tablets that will protect your thyroid gland in case there's a nuclear attack. So if you'd like to order these products or obtain additional information, why don't you call 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Or go to our website at radioliberty.com. That's radioliberty.com. Once again, our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927.
Did you know that there's an increasing amount of scientific data which says that fluoride in drinking water is dangerous? Are you aware that your drinking water may in fact contain many unhealthy substances, even things which can cause sickness or disease? If you'd like information on how to remove these contaminants, find out about the Berkey water filter. You can call 800-544-8927 for complete information. There is a way to return to having pure, safe drinking water. The Berkey water filter. Call 800-544-8927 for information about a product that could protect you and your family from waterborne disease. The number to call is 800-544-8927. Call today.
This is Pastor David Whitney with Institute on the Constitution. Our founders constructed this constitutional republic with the intent that citizens would function as the final check on the power of civil government. But that design would only work if the citizens understood our form of government as well as their responsibilities within that structure. That's why Institute on the Constitution has put together a host kit that enables anyone, anywhere, with any group of people to instruct them on our founding documents. We urge you to order a host kit. You can call us toll-free at 866-730-9796. That's 866-730-9796. Or you can order it on the web. Go to our website, iotconline.com. The only way our republic will survive is if its citizens arm themselves with the knowledge of our founding fathers' original intent of the Constitution, the Declaration, and the Bill of Rights. Call us, 866-730-9796.
Great.
Great. Dr. Stan, I think this is the first time I've listened to your show. I was just kind of, you know, flipping through the radio, and I heard your show, and it just kind of grabbed my attention because it sounded like something that I've said, some of the things that you've said and some of the things that, you were thinking that, you know, that I've thought, and it seemed like no one else was catching on, and so it's always kind of great to hear, you know, an intelligent person making some of the same statements, I think, and some of the same, you know, theories and stuff. So,
well, Jim, I hope you'll become a regular listener, and you'll get other people there in Albany listening as well.
I think so. I think so, Dr. Stan, and I was telling your call screener that, you know, I was feeling kind of down about the it seems like the people that are destroying our country are so so aggressively destroying our country have a really firm grip right now. I said, you know, a few days ago I started saying, you know, the only thing I can do at this point is say I told you so.
Jim, don't do that. The thing is that the other side, there's not very many of them. I mean, and everything they do has to be done in secret because they know that if the American people ever really understood this, they would be arrested and tried for treason. We have people who have sworn allegiance to this nation who hate America. They're globalists. They're parts of these organizations we talk about, the Council on Foreign Relations, the Bilderbergers, certainly the Group of 30, the Trilateral Commission. These are the people who run our country, who control our media, who control our major banks and corporations. But there are not that many of them. There are probably less than 5,000.
Well, I would agree with you, but I think there are people who are in key positions right now, and especially in our media, not just the broadcast news media, although that is completely dominated by those people, but also just the media in general, the entertainment industry, and it just seems like it's virtually impossible to get the other side of the story out.
Well, we see if we do have alternative radio we did not have before. We have the internet we've never had before. A shortwave has really caught the imagination of the people. It's possible to get an inexpensive satellite system and listen to our satellite feed 24 hours a day. And you can hear me 9 hours a day and not get anything accomplished. But other people are doing the same things. There are a number of ministries that are out there. I did a wonderful program this afternoon with Dr. Catherine Albrecht, a PhD, a Harvard educated. And, of course, she does 2 hours a day on Genesis, almost immediately before I come on the air. So we have means of reaching people we've never had before. Don't get discouraged and say, I told you so. Help us get the information out. But the most important thing you can do, Jim, is understand there are powerful spiritual forces that energize these people who want to destroy America and really the world.
I do tend to agree with that. And whether or not they're conscious of it, I mean, it's clearly a strong socialist movement that's been building and building, and it's really, I don't know, almost remarkable how strong that the socialists have really been pushing towards moving this country in that direction. And now I see, it seems as if they're energized even more than they've ever have been.
But Jim, what people do not understand is that the socialist movement has been funded by people of great wealth and the great tax-exempt foundation.
I understand that, Dr. Stan. I understand
right.
that.
That's what's so difficult for people to understand and believe.
Well, it's not, though, in the sense that I've always looked at it. This is just the example I use in my mind is someone like George Soros. It was perfectly fine for him to become a multi-billionaire, but now that that level, he feels that it's perfectly fine for him to prevent anyone else from acquiring wealth. So it's almost as if he's
you know, climbed the stepladder up to a window or whatever, and now it's up to him to kind of kick that ladder down and make sure that no one else can become a successful business person as he was. And I feel it's quite disgusting personally. But it is real. And you are right. The socialists, the ones sort of calling the shots, so to speak, are actually quite wealthy. They're
hold that thought for just a minute. I want to get our telephone number out. It's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. And Jim is just saying, and he's just a first-time listener, that just found us on the dial up there in Albany, New York, at the FM station we have there. And basically he's just saying that a lot of wealthy people are behind this. This is what's so hard for people to understand. Hey, hang on there, Jim. We'll be back in just a moment. And give us a call, ladies and gentlemen, right here at Radio Liberty.
Kneel in prayer.
Well, this is Dr. Stan. We've still got John with us, Jim with us from Albany. Go right ahead, Jim.
Oh, that's quite all right. No, Dr. Stan, I was using, George Soros as an example there. Another example is that if you were to do a study of across the globe of countries that have basically gone, I call it semi-socialist. It's not fully, public ownership, or countries fully taking over businesses like Cuba, for example. But countries that I would call semi-socialist, most of them in Europe, what you'll notice is that in those countries, the absolute wealthiest people can still maintain their wealth, sort of the old money. So if someone is a multi-millionaire or a billionaire, they'll notice a decrease in their assets, but they will still, in a sense, be locked into that status of the absolute wealthiest. What you'll see happen after that is essentially the rest of the population has now lost their opportunities for job growth. So someone, as an example, like George Soros, for example, he will be locked in if this country goes fully socialist as he would like, or close to it, should be semi-socialist, he will be locked in as that, you know, established half or quarter of 1% of the population that is extremely wealthy. What you'll have in turn, though, is the rest of the population will lose their ability for social movement to be able to kind of climb up the economic ladder the way that he was allowed to when he gained his wealth.
Well, Jim, let me just point out that really what this is about is the fact in America, while we limited the power of the federal government so men could be free, under socialism, the government controls everything, and then the very people of great wealth control the government. This is what people have totally missed. We'll be right back. This is Dr. Stan. We have Jim calling us from Albany, and I'm going to have to let you go, Jim. I appreciate your call. I hope you become a regular listener up there in Albany, New York, and you'll get a lot of other people listening.
Absolutely, Dr. Stan. Thank you very much.
Good night. God bless. And let's go to John, who's calling us from Spokane, Washington. Again, our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. That's 464-8295. Hi, John. How are you doing?
Hi, Dr. Stan. I'm doing real good. Thank you. I was listening to your last caller, and I hope he does continue to listen to your show and some of the other shows that are out there, whether it's Alex Jones of the Power Hour or any a number of the people who are forwarding the message of what's really going on, like yourself. Anyway, because he sounds like he's been listening to Tokyo Rose and is getting the idea that the game is over, when what I'm hearing and what I'm seeing is we are continually building, and it's not going to be too far in the future where we're going to reach critical mass, and it's going to go like a chain reaction.
I think you're absolutely right. I think more and more people are aware something's wrong now. They don't understand it. They see a lot of dots out there, but they can't connect them. And certainly with something I say or something Alex might say or Joyce Riley or Catherine Albrecht or so many of the people out there talking or something you might say to some of your friends, and suddenly the light's going to go on and they're going to join with us. Yes, we are on the side that is growing. The side on the other side is very defensive, and they are moving very rapidly to consolidate their dictatorship here in America because they're scared to death the American people are going to wake up.
Absolutely. And when you look at, their Achilles heel, like you've mentioned, is the fact that they have to be working under secrecy. And people are communicating, and there is a groundswell that's occurring. I'm seeing it up here in Spokane, and I have seen this in local areas before where a lot of politicians or people that you think are influential, they're not power brokers at all. They're actually quite fearful, and they always seem to, you might say, cuddle up with the winning side. And what happens is as the opinions and considerations of people start to shift toward the other side, the cowards will run to the side of that are winning. So the cowards right now are going, oh, yes, we're going to go along with the government and the powers that be and whatever is the politically correct viewpoint and this type of conventional wisdom. Whereas the brave people are looking and they're seeing, you know, the emperor has no clothes and the great and mighty powerful Oz is actually being manipulated by a little weak man who has no strength behind a curtain, a coward, actually, who has to hide behind a curtain. And then we have all the power right here to be able to make this change. And when more and more people start waking up to this and seeing it, what will happen is there will be a massive shift to the other side of the game. And the cowards will then run over, and I'm speaking to most politicians, they're cowards. They'll run to the other side and say, oh, yes, I was behind it the whole time. And we're starting to already see that with Tea Parties, the Texas Tea Party, where they booed the governor and the congressman and what have you. And it's building, and I think that it's just that chip away, one step at a time, lots of base hits, more runs on the board type of thing. And we will prevail. I know we will prevail.
Well, our job is to do our best, and certainly behind this political and ideological and cultural battle we're engaged in is this powerful spiritual battle. And there really are powerful spiritual forces on the other side, but, Chris, I hope that the righteous spiritual forces on our side, or hope there maybe were on his side. We are called to do our best, but to recognize that this really is a spiritual battle being fought on a political, ideological, cultural, and financial battlefield. And so, certainly we shouldn't be running and hiding, and so many people are thinking about rushing off to some other country. The battle is here. This is a worldwide movement. They are getting GPS indicators and coordinates on every home in the entire world. If America falls, the world falls. The battle is here, and I believe we have an obligation to be involved. This is our country, and certainly they do not have a right to take it from us. I agree with you, and I just hope that there are more and more people out there who will join you. I know Spokane is a wonderful area, and there are an awful lot of good people there. Certainly you had quite an influence there. And, on your state, of course, tragically, we don't have the same conservative movement up in Seattle, but perhaps it'll grow. Our telephone number, again, is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. If you're out there and you'd like to give us a call, you have something you'd like to talk about, you can talk about whatever you want to. From what's going on in Washington, D.C., to what's going on in your area, to what's going on in California, to the mess we're in today. But anyway, go right ahead, John.
Well, I really do believe, if you look at, for example, how we were doing, when I first found out about this stuff was back in the early 80s, a chiropractor gave me a book called World Without Cancer by G. Edward Griffith.
Yes.
And I read about this, and I was, at that point, the lights went off, on, I should say, and I've been researching it ever since, and then I stumbled across your channel. And I've seen this in playing sports, and I know in playing sports, and anybody out there who's played sports, it's more mental than it is physical. And so much of it has to do with your belief. Chuck Norris, I once saw an interview with Chuck Norris, and he would stand opposite his opponent before the match started, and he would look the guy in the eyes, and he would just continue looking at the guy in the eyes until the guy backed down. And he knew that once he backed down the other guy, which meant that guy believed that Chuck Norris would beat him, Chuck Norris knew he could beat him. And I've seen this in sports all the time. If you think that you're beaten, you'll lose. And if the other thing is if a dog chases you, like you're walking down the street and you got some antagonistic dog chasing you, if you run, he'll chase you and he'll get you. And if you're afraid, he's going to nail you. If you turn and start charging him and get angry, then what happens is the dog freaks out and runs the other way. And I was more the coward. And I can remember when I went to the University of Washington back in the 70s, and I can remember this guy who looked like some kind of clean-cut Ivy Leaguer type of guy. And he his mother raised him, and here was this clean-cut, middle-class guy, and he got put in Central High School, which is where Jimi Hendrix went to school. And the first day of school, a group of black guys hit him up for money. And this guy was just some middle-sized, not strong, just kind of like just your average Joe. And the first thing he did is dropped his books and started swinging. And he said, they respected me and they never bothered me because they knew that although I got the living daylights beat out of me, they knew that there was easier prey. And that's the thing in America. What we have to do is aggressively seek this out. Home of the brave, land of the free. So long as we're cowards, we'll be slaves.
Amen to that. God bless and thanks very much.
You
well
too,
said,
Dr.
John.
Stan. Keep up the good work.
I will too. You too. Let's go to Mark, who's calling us from Charlottesville, Virginia. That's Mark from Charlottesville, Virginia. And our number again, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. Hi, Mark. How are you doing?
Doing great, Dr. Stan. I just wanted to talk about it's good to think things through in advance. And you talk about staying here to, because the fight is here, and I agree. But one decision that we all might be faced with is what to do if we are faced with a forced vaccination.
All right, I think that we need to talk about that right now. And what we have to do is say no. And why would we say no? And they say, well, we're going to arrest you if you don't. You say, look, the vaccines are maybe effective, but they are not safe. I mean, in the past, they put things into these vaccines that were harmful to people and then tell them about the simian virus 40 in the original polio vaccine. And this reference for that is certainly in a book published by the National Institute of Health called The Health Century. And it's an amazing book, published by, under the auspices of the government, written by Edward Shorter, that tells how they knew there was a cancer virus in the original polio vaccine, and they gave it anyway. And if they would do that and then talk about the Baxter, I think if enough people say we're not going to do it, they're going to back down. It was the same way, Mark, recently when they were trying to get this compulsory ID, every driver's license in the country was to be, you know, a federal ID card. And there were half a dozen states that said, we're not going to do it, and they backed down. And I think, like that dog that John was talking about just a moment or two ago, the dog that's chasing you and you turn and you start to advance towards him, he'll run away. And that's what the federal government did. I think we need to get the people to understand you cannot trust the vaccines. And we have to admit that they have been effective, but at a terrible price. And certainly the CDC will not tell you why one in six American children has a neurodevelopmental abnormality, why one in nine children has asthma. You don't see this in other countries where they don't vaccinate. You don't see this in the Amish children where they don't vaccinate. I think that what we need to do is convince enough Americans, and we need to teach them how to approach this. And if they're going to say, well, we're going to put you in a camp, fine, well, go ahead and put me in a camp. But if anything happens to me, my blood is on your hands and you're answerable to God. And we ought to start talking about God when, of course, we're dealing with the government authorities and people from the government. Because I'll tell you one thing, most of them are afraid of God's judgment in their own hearts. They know he's real.
That's a very, very good answer. That was some of the answers I was looking for. I mean,
basically, we're going to put together a program on this and just trying to get all of my thoughts when I have a chance to list all the things that they've put in the vaccines which are harmful. Aluminum is harmful. Why would you inject it into people? Mercury is harmful. Why would you inject it into our pregnant women? I mean, they've lied about taking the mercury out of childhood vaccines. It's a half-truth, and a half-truth is no better than a lie. They've taken it out of childhood vaccines, but not out of vaccines that they give to children. And they're giving our children at 6 months of age a full toxic dose of mercury. Mercury is so toxic, they ban methylate and mercurochrome. You can't put it on the skin. But it's all right to put it and inject it into our children. They know what they're doing.
And I see this, you know, in Norway, for example, they've had 41 cases of the bird flu, not the bird flu, the H1N1 flu, and yet they're going to have forced vaccinations for the entire population.
Well, I think we need to. We've got a few listeners over in Norway. I hope that they're going to get our information, and we'll try to put this all together into an organized fashion within the next month, and just say these are the reasons why I refuse to take the vaccination, because I don't trust the public health authorities. They've lied to us about the statin drugs. They've lied to us about the danger of vaccinations. Not that they're not effective, because they are, but they also have serious consequences. They're not rare consequences. One in nine American children has asthma. We never used to see that. Why do they have it? And they can't tell you. Well, we know that they're safe and effective. Well, no, you don't know that they're safe. And we have some of their own documents that show that they're lying.
I'm worried that there may be an effort to reduce the population. Maybe not immediately. Maybe they put something in these vaccines that show up 5-10 years later. I don't know.
I think we have to talk about the population control agenda. And if you haven't read my population control agenda monograph, it's up on my webpage at radioliberty.com. It needs to be updated, but it still is the best thing that's out there, a little brief treatise at radioliberty.com. It's called the population control agenda monograph. Pull it down and read it. It's got a lot of great information. Hey, I got to go.
I appreciate it.
God bless, and thanks so much for calling. Okay.
Thank you.
And let's go to Bill calling from Tennessee. Again, our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. Hi, Bill. How you doing?
Good. I was just thinking, it was a few years ago that the Bush administration tried to put the universal smallpox vaccine out, and there was a big refusal to accept it by the first responders, police, nurses, whoever, you know.
Right, and because they refused, they backed away from it. And it was totally ridiculous, because there isn't any smallpox in the world today. I mean, this is one of the great accomplishments of all time. They've done away with smallpox. So why do they keep some of the virus there so they can make a vaccine out of it? Why didn't they destroy it? And that would have been the end of smallpox. But certainly when they started talking about the smallpox vaccine, some of the people who work for government said, we're not going to take it, and they backed down. The one thing, you see, there are not very many of them, but the one thing they're scared to death of is that people are going to say, we're not going to go along with your programs.
Yeah,
and
well,
at that point, they have no alternative other than to declare martial law and arrest, start arresting people and killing people, and that'll turn the population against them. And right now, at least with the Internet and the availability of Twitter and all these other things, they are frankly afraid to do this sort of thing.
All right. Another thing, you're in California, and I don't know how long this IOU thing has been going on or how long they anticipated it, but I assume California is probably the biggest provider of agricultural products to the rest of the country.
Right.
And what would happen if just total breakdown of all government services? And some people are saying that the federal government is what they want to happen. That's the reason they're supposedly giving all these trillions of dollars to unknown people, but California, which is the biggest economy and the biggest agricultural state, they're not going to have.
Well, not only that, but certainly we are the largest agricultural producer here, probably in the entire nation, and they're cutting off the water to the farmers. In fact, the farmers were up in Sacramento demonstrating within the last week. Not a word about this, or at least I didn't see anything in the media about the farmers being up there demonstrating, because they're effectively cutting off their water in the name of protecting the fishes. You know, my goodness, we can't have water to grow food for people. We've got to protect the little fishies. Well, they've taken out over 430 dams. Dams are really essential for holding water back, so there'd be water for irrigation to produce electricity. They don't want cheap electricity. Hydroelectric electricity is very, very cheap. They want expensive electricity, like solar power and like wind power. What they really want to do is drive up the cost of electricity, get rid of those dams that produce cheap electricity, but they can't tell the people that. It's all about fishies. But in the meantime, of course, they're going to destroy the agriculture here in California, and certainly in the Pajaro Valley, very close to where we live, the Salinas Valley. Real water problems, instead of facing them years ago, they've let them come to a crisis situation. Hang on, we'll be right back. Go right ahead, Bill, but I agree with you. I think that they're doing everything they can to ensure that the whole system comes down in a couple of years.
Well, what I...
Heart disease is on the rise. Clogged arteries, high blood pressure, and high cholesterol levels may not be fully detected by you, but the symptoms are there. Loss of energy, blood sugar spikes and drops, poor circulation, and irregular heartbeat are just a few of these that can alert you that something is wrong. Hear how Heart and Body Extract is making a difference in thousands of people's lives across America.
My blood pressure has normalized. My diabetes has totally improved.
Everyone is telling me now how much healthier I look, and I'm telling everyone how much healthier I feel. I recommend Heart and Body Extract to everyone.
Anybody over 40 in the North American continent should be using this product as a preventative to keep their cardiovascular system healthy.
Order your 2-month supply today by calling 866-295-5305. That's 866-295-5305. Or order online, hbextract.com. Heart and Body Extract, 866-295-5305 or hbextract.com.
In these times of falling values, high unemployment, loss of income, and with hyperinflation on its way, we have created a 1-ounce silver coin with a cross and the words of John 3:16 on one side and the American Eagle on the other. These coins are mural finished, 0.999 silver. Each of these beautiful coins will always have an earthly store of value, plus the cross with John 3:16 as an eternal value. Go to www.john316coin.com and call 1-877-316-COIN while supplies last. Order these beautiful 1 ounce John 3:16 American Eagle coins today by going to john316coin.com and calling 1-877-316-COIN.
This is Pastor David Whitney with Institute on the Constitution. Our founders constructed this constitutional republic with the intent that citizens would function as the final check on the power of civil government. But that design would only work if the citizens understood our form of government as well as their responsibilities within that structure. That's why Institute on the Constitution has put together a host kit that enables anyone, anywhere, with any group of people to instruct them on our founding documents. We urge you to order a host kit. You can call us toll free at 866-730-9796. That's 866-730-9796. Or you can order it on the web. Go to our website, iotconline.com. The only way our republic will survive is if its citizens arm themselves with the knowledge of our founding fathers' original intent of the Constitution, the Declaration, and the Bill of Rights. Call us.
1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. What's really going on? The people who control the major banks are trying to take over our control of our country. They work in concert with what I call the Brotherhood of Darkness. We, of course, give you all the details in my talk on the Financial Armageddon. It's available on DVD. And you need the syllabus that goes with that. But, of course, if you want to get into history, if you've got a book called The Coming Battle, it was written in 1899 by Mr. Walther. He was a lawyer who talked about what the banks had done in the past and how they'd raped and pillaged the American people and how eventually they were going to work to take over control of our government. Well, they do control our government today. This is what people don't understand. You need, of course, to get the a book written in 1935 by Gertrude Coogan called The Money Creators. Banks create money out of nothing. It's not real money. They call it credit. And when they cut off the credit, the economy contracts, and that's what the big banks have done. Of course, the small banks are frightened that the Federal Reserve started paying interest for the first time in history, paying interest on the reserves that it deposited in the past. While the banks were required to deposit their money with the Federal Reserve System, deposit $1, you can lend 10 from the bank, but that $1 is there in cases of run on the bank, and then the Federal Reserve will stand behind you. Well, what, of course, the Federal Reserve has done now is start paying interest on those reserves so that it encourages the banks to put their money in the Federal Reserve rather than loan it out. Why would you do that if you're trying to stimulate the economy? Because they're not trying to stimulate the economy. They're trying to break the back of the economy. And then, of course, the large banks, which own the Federal Reserve. Remember, the Federal Reserve is a privately owned central bank owned by predominantly by half a dozen major banks. They control the Federal Reserve. This is a privately owned bank, not part of the government, contrary to what you've been told. And, of course, these banks are withholding loans. I mean, certainly when they were given the TARP funds, the Troubled Asset Relief Program funds, they lent them to China, they lent them to India, they lent them to Dubai, they lent them certainly to Spain, they lent them all over the world, but they refused to lend money here in America. Why would they do that? Very simply, they want to destroy our economy. There is a timetable. There is a master plan to bring about a world government. You will see it epitomized, demonstrated on the back of the dollar bill, the pyramid cap by the all-seeing eye of Lucifer, and the caption underneath, Novus Ordo Seclorum, the new secular order, or certainly the one world government. That's what it's all about. This has been in the making, this has been planned for thousands of years. And, of course, you cannot understand what's going on unless you understand the spiritual forces at work. And if you haven't yet seen Pastor Billy Crone's excellent DVD series, The Final Countdown, it's 5 DVDs in Part 1 and 5 DVDs in Part 2. You need to get them. Our telephone number is 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. The title is The Final Countdown. We actually have a book by the same title, which by Dr. Krohn tells the same story. And then, of course, we have the first five talks on a CD set called The Coming or Countdown to Armageddon. Countdown to Armageddon. We have a four tape set on the Financial Armageddon update. So these are CDs of recent interviews. We have my talk on DVD. The Financial Armageddon, the syllabus, you need to get this information. You need to get my talk on the Brotherhood of Darkness. There really are secret organizations out there that are bound together by a common goal, and that is the destruction of the United States. And then, of course, you need to get our talk on the forbidden secret and the syllabus. And then we ask you to pray for America, to pray for revival, but please pray for Radio Liberty. This is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, that illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you of the views that are expressed here and not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, and, well, we had hoped for this hour to have Peter Lance, who's written a number of books on the Islamic movement. Chris's latest book, which has just been republished, is entitled A Triple Cross, and it's a story of a fellow named Ali Muhammad, who is certainly one of the most important characters, certainly of all of the so-called spies. Certainly we know Muhammad Atta. Remember, he was the one who was supposedly so involved with the attack, the September 11th attack, and Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, and a lot of these names, Ramzi Yosef, all of these names seem to play a part in what's going on today. But certainly the one name that most people have never heard of is Ali Muhammad. And of course, but Peter has written a fascinating story of this most exceptional and certainly very outstanding individual. Peter, are you there?
I'm here, Dr. Stan.
All right, fine. Well, I'm going to let you tell the story of who he is, why he is so important, and maybe you can tell me why most Americans have never heard of him, because of all of the characters involved in this whole so-called Islamic terrorist plot, I think he is the most significant.
Yeah, well, Ali Muhammad was a radical Egyptian army major a member of the same unit that actually murdered Anwar Sadat in 1981. He escaped prosecution at the time, ironically, because he was on an officer exchange program in the United States. But one of the principals indicted and convicted in that plot was Dr. Ayman al-Zawahiri, who we'll remember as the guy who went on to form al-Qaeda with Osama bin Laden. He's the fellow with the glasses and little goatee that often is seen in these fatwas that threaten America. So, long story short, Ali Muhammad in the early 1980s was drummed out of the Egyptian military by Mubarak, who took over after Sadat's assassination, the president of Egypt, and he was kind of adopted by al-Zawahiri. And it's important for your listeners, Dr. Stan, if they want to follow along with this epic story, if you don't mind, I'll direct them to my website, which is peterlance.com, one word, P-E-T-E-R-L-A-N-C-E.com. The reason being, in the book, Triple Cross, I have a 32-page illustrated timeline that describes, that illustrates what I'm going to be telling the story tonight. And if people can download it for free from my website, peterlance.com, it helps if they follow along. In any case, Ali Muhammad was, in 1984, actually approached the CIA in Cairo. This is after the bombing of the U.S. Embassy in 83 in April that killed a number of people, and then, of course, the tragic bombing at the air base in Beirut where the Marine barracks blew in October. And the CIA was desperate to get Islamic, speaking or Arab-speaking people to work for them. And so they used Ali Muhammad to go into a mosque in Hamburg, but it apparently blew his cover and was put on a watch list. However, having said that, meaning he shouldn't have been allowed into the United States, but he gets on a TWA flight from Athens to JFK, and on the flight in, he meets a woman named Linda Sanchez. She was an older woman, single, and coming back from vacation in Greece, and he basically was a stud. This is a good-looking young guy, Ali Muhammad. And he basically seduced her for all practical purposes because they ended up getting married, and they had a drive-through wedding chapel in Reno, Nevada 6 weeks later. So he's now living in Silicon Valley in Santa Clara in her town, and he enlists in the U.S. Army, Dr. Stan, and ends up at Fort Bragg, North Carolina, as a sergeant at the John F. Kennedy Special Warfare School. That's where the elite officers of the Green Beret train.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back in a moment.
All right. Thank you.
All right, Peter, go right ahead. Go right ahead, Peter. Peter, go right ahead. Peter, our guest is Peter Lance, and we'll see if we get him back on the line. He doesn't know we're still out talking here. Peter Lance, are you there?
I'm here.
Okay, you go right ahead. No, you go right ahead.
So anyway, Ali Muhammad ends up at this school, and he's coming up to New York on weekends where he trains the original World Trade Center bombing cell, the cell responsible for what's called the Day of Terror plot to blow up the bridges and tunnels into Manhattan. He trains El Sayed Nasser, the terrorist who killed Rabbi Meir Kahane in 1990. I contend that was the first Al-Qaeda blood spilled on American soil. So Ali Muhammad is this master spy, and he literally is, coming to New York. But from 1992 forward, he also presents himself to the FBI in California, where he becomes an FBI informant. So he's watching the FBI, which, as you know, is charged with protecting America against acts of terrorism. And he's watching the FBI, and he's studying their playbook on Al-Qaeda, and pretending to help them, to give them little crumbs. And the FBI takes him seriously. He has an agent named John Zent, Z-E-N-T, who's kind of an empty suit, who is totally outgunned by Ali Muhammad. And ultimately, Ali Muhammad, eventually, he moves bin Laden's entire entourage from Afghanistan to Khartoum. He trains bin Laden's personal bodyguard. He sets up all the terror camps in the Sudan. He writes the manual of terror that was found in Manchester, England. He's the Zelig of terror, Dr. Stan. He's virtually everywhere, yet he's also interacting with these feds in New York.
I think it's very important for our listeners to know that Ali Muhammad was there in New York. There is an Islamic terror cell with one of the mosques, and these are the people who are, first of all, going off every weekend or many weekends, going to a camp where, of course, they're training in military warfare, and they have automatic weapons. They're firing automatic weapons, and they're being watched by the FBI. The FBI knows everything about this Islamic terrorist cell, and this is in about 1990, 1991. These are the people who are going to be responsible for the bombing of the World Trade Center in 1993. They are being trained and schooled by Ali Muhammad, who supposedly is working for the FBI, which is an incredible story. And most people have never heard this aspect of the story of the first World Trade Center bombing, yet Ali Muhammad was instrumental, and we'll be right back in just a moment. Well, yeah, this is Dr. Stan. Certainly, we're just talking about the part that
I have. I had them up here.
Peter, we're back on the air here.
No, it doesn't matter.
Okay, fine. Basically, that Ali Muhammad was involved with the cell, the Islamic terror cell that was working there in New York City. They were actually involved in military training. They're the ones who planned the initial bombing of the World Trade Center in 1993. That was, I think, probably hundreds and hundreds of people were injured in that bombing. But Ali Muhammad was involved with this group. And yet he continues working for the FBI. So how much did he really tell the FBI about this Islamic terrorist group in New York City? Do we know?
Well, I think he told them very little, but let me just remind you, like a document that in my book, Triple Cross, I have about 32 pages of appendices, Dr. Stan, and they're also on my website. You can download them from peterlance.com. And one of these appendices is what's called an FBI 302 memo. And 302 memos are written in anticipation of litigation. Okay? So this memo is on page 579 of Triple Cross, the new edition. But you can, again, go to peterlance.com. On the right-hand side, it's secret, top secret. You can download it. Listen to this. This is dated November 13, 1990. Now, you mentioned from the early 90s they knew about them. Actually, next week will be the 20th anniversary. I think it was July 14th of 1989. The FBI Special Operations Group, which is the unit that got John Gotti, followed these men from this mosque on Atlantic Avenue to this shooting range in Long Island and photographed, dozens of photographs. Of the men photographed, three were convicted in the Trade Center bombing, two in this Day of Terror plot that Patrick Fitzgerald prosecuted, and we'll get to Fitzgerald in a while. And the lead, one of them, El Sayed Nasir, killed this rabbi, this world leader, in the Marriott Hotel on Lexington Avenue. Now, Lou Napoli was a detective assigned to the Terrorism Task Force. Here's a memo on page 579 of my book, and it says, it's dated November 15th, and it says that these men are going up to what's called the High Rock Range in Connecticut, and they are firing, Dr. Stan, from 1988 to 1990, okay? Almost 2 years, 1,000 rounds per day on weekends, 1,000 rounds of ammunition in Connecticut, in the middle of New England, within say 100 miles of New York City. And this is going on, and there's a guy named Raymond Materza, who's an ex-cop, who's like helping them, okay? Now, Raymond Materza, there's another document in my book where Patrick Fitzgerald, and I'm telling you, Patrick Fitzgerald was the general in the War on Terror. He was not only the head of organized crime and terrorism in the Southern District Prosecutor's Office, he was literally directing what they call the Bin Laden Squad in the FBI's New York office, Squad I-49. In my book, on page 606 and 607, you will see an unindicted co-conspirators list. In the Day of Terror case, 1995, that Fitzgerald prosecuted. Who's on the list, Dr. Stan? You've got Osama bin Laden, Ali Muhammad, Muhammad Jamal Khalifa, the brother-in-law of bin Laden, okay? There's a guy on the list named Daniel Materza and Raymond Materza. So the first dot on the chart is that they know that this guy is training these terrorists in 1988 to 90. Now you've got Patrick Fitzgerald putting his name on a list with Osama bin Laden. Why weren't alarms sounded, given that they had these dozens of photographs from this other shooting range? And again, you ask these very valid questions. These are the questions that I ask in this book. And Patrick Fitzgerald, who's now U.S. Attorney in Chicago, the man who indicted Blagojevich, who put Conrad Black, a billionaire, convicted Governor Ryan, he has tried for 20 months to kill my book, Triple Cross. He said, 32 pages of threat letters to HarperCollins, my publisher, threatening to sue for libel. The most recent one on June 2nd, saying that if the book comes out and it defames him, he will sue. Well, the book has been out now since the 16th of June. We haven't heard a peep out of Fitzgerald. And it's almost unprecedented for a sitting U.S. official to try and kill a book critical of his performance in office. But you can understand when you read Triple Cross, go to peterlance.com and start to read this story, why Patrick Fitzgerald might be embarrassed by some of my findings.
Well, I think the fascinating thing is that Certainly the FBI had to know about Ali Muhammad because later on he is the man who lays out the plan for the embassy bombing in Tanzania and Kenya, where I think, what was it, 5,000 people are wounded, and I don't know, quite a few were actually killed. He was the man who laid out the plan for this, and yet, of course, why he was allowed to continue operating. And actually, of course, they had to know that he was working very closely with Osama bin Laden, was training Osama bin Laden's bodyguard at the very same time he was operating as a sergeant in the Special Forces. Would you like to get into the background of that? How could a sergeant in the Special Forces be going over to the Islamic countries and working with the Islamists without the government knowing? We have all sorts of intelligence agencies who are tracking what goes on in those terrorist camps. They had to know because Ali Muhammad was over there.
Well, not only that, Dr. Stan, but I interviewed, through one of my researchers, we interviewed Colonel Anderson, who was Ali Muhammad's advisor at Fort Bragg, and he told us that Ali actually came to him audaciously while he was at Fort Bragg. He's an enlisted Army sergeant. He said, "I'm going to go to Afghanistan and fight on behalf of the Mujahideen against the Soviets, okay?" And Anderson said, "No, you're not doing that. We're not officially supposed to be there. You know, the CIA was covertly funding the Mujahideen, but it would have been like Francis Gary Powers. Remember the U-2 pilot that was shot down during the Eisenhower years? I mean, we weren't officially doing U-2 flights, but it was an embarrassment. So if Ali Muhammad had been captured or killed, official U.S. Army sergeant, it would have been a disaster. So guess what? Ali Muhammad audaciously thumbed his nose at his own boss, his own commanding officer, flew to Paris, made his way to Afghanistan, and came back having claimed to have killed two Soviet Spetsnaz, which are special forces troops, and he had their belts as war trophies, and he threw them on the desk of Colonel Anderson as if to say, aha, you see? So obviously,
well,
he had help.
Peter, I've been in the military. I mean, you don't do that with your commanding officer unless you have some special protection, unless you have a force behind you. You do not defy a direct order. They can put you in prison for that.
Court-martial, of course.
But yeah. So why didn't they court-martial him?
Because Anderson said that he referred it to the judge, the JAG officer, for a court-martial, and the guy refused. He said, "We don't have enough evidence," which is absurd. So Colonel Anderson's opinion was, when we interviewed him, is that he was getting some protection either from the CIA or the FBI.
And I think this is what's so important, that here's a man who's, you know, pretending to be an FBI agent, then supposedly pretending to be part of Osama bin Laden's group, but he has very powerful friends in the CIA or the FBI, and certainly this is why, to this very day, no one knows where Ali Muhammad is. He's not only a part of a triple cross, he is a disappearing man, and nobody can find out where he is, and the question is, why? Here's the man who planned the bombing of the embassy in Tanzania, U.S. embassy, the embassy in Kenya, and of course, is he in government protective custody? Do we really know?
Well, he's in some kind of protective custody because some kind of custody, according to Jack Clunan. Now, Jack Clunan, C-L-O-O-N-A-N, was the agent in Squad I-49 that I interviewed. And from 1996, January, Patrick Fitzgerald, when I told you he was the general in the war on terror, he was charged with President Clinton getting an indictment of Osama bin Laden. So he kind of was running this elite squad called I-49 in the New York office of the Bureau. And Clunan was an agent, a guy named Dan Coleman, another agent named Frank Pellegrino, and another one called Harlan Bell, four of the top agents in New York. So Clunan's job was to go back and find out who this Ali Muhammad was, right, retrospectively, from 96 on. His jaw was on the ground, Dr. Stan, when he began to uncover some of the things I've just told you about with Fort Bragg, et cetera. So, but here's what is so, there's no mystery connected to what I'm about to tell you. When they had this Day of Terror case, which I contend was like the mop-up case for their failure to stop the World Trade Center bombing, which if you go to peterlance.com and you download the timeline in the upper right corner, you'll see I make a very strong case that the FBI could have stopped the first bombing in 93. So they had an undercover informant named Ahmad Salem, who was a good ex-Egyptian army officer, who was loyal to America. He was recruited by a courageous agent named Nancy Floyd from Texas, who literally got this guy into Salem, infiltrated the cell of a blind sheikh, and he was right on the inside. They were paying him $500 a week. Well, this new head of terrorism came in named Carson Dunbar. It was, in my opinion, an empty suit. And he was, I think, threatened by Nancy Floyd, and he didn't like Salem. And so he basically, Salem withdrew, okay? And the last thing Salem said to Nancy Floyd in the fall of 92, somebody's now in town. There's some new guy in town. Well, the new guy in town was a real bomber named Ramzi Yousef. And he said to her, all you have to do is follow Abu Lima and Salema. And Abu Lima and Salema was, Salema's a little Palestinian guy, and Abu Lima's a 6'2" or 3" red-headed Egyptian, stuck out like a sore thumb. And the FBI had been on to them since this Calvert and surveillance in 1989. They'd even gone in and Napoli, this cop, and his partner Antisev had searched, Abu Lima's apartment. They actually had a warrant on the guy. And so this, Salem, the good agent, is saying, the good informant, is saying to Nancy, please, just follow these guys. They will lead you to whatever's going on. And so she did her best. She tried to pass it up the chain, but, you know, at that point, Dunbar spurned her. But Salem, the last thing he said to her, Dr. Stan, was, don't call me when the bombs go off, plural. You know, that was his warning that something's going to happen. Well, guess what? The day after the World Trade Center bombing, the FBI brought Salem back, and they paid him $1.5 million to do what he was doing in the fall of 92.
But, of course, the amazing thing about Salem is he was going to build the bombs for the Islamic terrorists, but he was going to build them with powder that wouldn't explode. And they wouldn't let him do it. And we have to ask ourselves, why? We'll be back in just a moment with Peter Lance right here at Radio Liberty. All right, Peter, go right ahead.
Okay. So Salem was, they brought him back, and he became the star witness for Patrick Fitzgerald.
Gold and silver is tremendously undervalued. Global demand vastly exceeds mine supply by more than 60% annually. There is little in the financial world more certain than a coming explosion in the prices of gold and silver. The U.S. dollar continues to lose value and respect as the world's reserve currency. Our nation faces challenges on many fronts, and a day doesn't pass without another economist bringing forth warnings of impending economic calamity. There has never been a better time than right now to acquire physical gold and silver. Discount Gold and Silver Trading was founded on the principles of truth and honesty. We believe in providing a quality product, quality service, and most importantly, competitive pricing. We provide all forms of precious metals, including American gold, silver, platinum, and rare investment and circulated coins. Silver bars, rounds, and 90% silver bags are on hand for the silver investor. Gold self-directed IRAs are available. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. Toll free, that's 1-800-375-4188.
Most Americans are iodine deficient today because they stopped adding iodine to our milk and to our flour, and only about half of the salt that's consumed in the United States today contains iodine. So Radio Liberty has produced a 4-tape or a 4-CD set that discusses the health benefits of iodine. We also offer iodorol. It contains 12.5 milligrams of iodine per tablet. And we also offer potassium iodide tablets that will protect your thyroid gland in case there's a nuclear attack. So if you'd like to order these products or obtain additional information, why don't you call 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Or go to our website at radioliberty.com. That's RadioLiberty.com. Once again, our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927.
Did you know that there's an increasing amount of scientific data which says that fluoride in drinking water is dangerous? Are you aware that your drinking water may in fact contain many unhealthy substances? Even things which can cause sickness or disease. If you'd like information on how to remove these contaminants, find out about the Verkey water filter. You can call 800-544-8927 for complete information. There is a way to return to having pure, safe drinking water. The Berkey Water Filter. Call 800-544-8927 for information about a product that could protect you and your family from waterborne disease. The number to call is 800-544-8927. Call today.
This is Pastor David Whitney with Institute on the Constitution. Our founders constructed this constitutional republic with the intent that citizens would function as the final check on the power of civil government. But that design would only work if the citizens understood our form of government as well as their responsibilities within that structure. That's why Institute on the Constitution has put together a host kit that enables anyone, anywhere, with any group of people to instruct them on our founding documents. We urge you to order a host kit. You can call us toll free at 866-730-9796. That's 866-730-9796. Or you can order it on the web. Go to our website, iotconline.com. The only way our republic will survive is if its citizens arm themselves with the knowledge of our founding fathers' original intent of the Constitution, the Declaration, and the Bill of Rights. Call us, 866-730-9796.
Is the general of the war on terror, effectively. He's the co-head and later the head of the what's called the Organized Crime and Terrorism Unit in the Southern District. And this is the famous office that begat Rudy Giuliani and Louis Freeh, the FBI director, etc. So now Pat Fitzgerald is trying to get an indictment on Bin Laden, and he has these four agents working for him. And one of them, Dan Coleman, goes to Nairobi because they pick up word through various investigative means that there's something going on in Africa, okay? There's some kind of plot, right? So Dan Coleman goes to search the home of a guy named Wadi El-Haj. And again, all these complicated Islamic names, but again, that's peterlance.com. You follow the timeline, or if you get the book, you'll see it's all laid out in color, actually. And Wadi El-Haj is a Lebanese convert from Christianity to Islam. And Wadi El-Haj has now become Bin Laden, was Bin Laden's, like, one of his personal guys in the Sudan. He was like running a lot of Bin Laden's businesses for Al-Qaeda. And he's also doing double duty as one of the co-conspirators with Ali Mohammed in this embassy bombing plot, okay? So Ian Coleman goes and searches Wadi El-Haj's house in Kenya. What does he find, Dr. Stan? Ali Mohammed's information. Oh my gosh, okay? They go, oh my gosh, Ali Mohammed, the guy who's an FBI informant from 92 on, the guy that got released from custody on the word of an FBI agent in California in 1993, you mean Ali Mohammed could be connected to this? So what do? Patrick Fitzgerald himself flies across the country with Harlan Bell and Jack Clune and these two agents, and Ali now is living in Sacramento. He meets Ali Mohammed at a restaurant across from the State House in Sacramento in the fall of 1997. Okay, this is 10 months before the bombs go off in Africa. And Ali Mohammed, understand at this point, he's a naturalized U.S. citizen who's taken an oath to protect America, and he's also an honorably discharged Army sergeant who's taken another oath to protect the United States. All right? And Patrick Fitzgerald naively, in my opinion, naively thinks he's going to turn this guy at this point. And Ali Mohammed looks at him across the table, and with audacity, Dr. Stan says, I love Osama bin Laden. I don't need a fatwa or a religious decree to attack America. I have a number of effectively sleeper agents that I can make operational at any time, and I can disappear at any time. And he basically thumbs his nose at Patrick Fitzgerald, and he gets up and leaves. Now, Pat, understand something. When Patrick Fitzgerald convicted the blind sheikh in 1995 with McCarthy in that Day of Terror plot, the law that he used was an old law of seditious conspiracy, meaning sedition is treason. They used the law of treason to get the blind sheikh. Now, what is Ali Mohammed doing in front of this federal prosecutor and two FBI? He's uttering words of treason. He's basically saying, I don't need a fatwa to attack America. After having taken two oaths to protect this country, they could have arrested him, in my opinion, on the spot. What do? They let him walk out of the restaurant. Patrick Fitzgerald turns to Clunan and he says, this is verbatim from Clunan. I recorded this, and there isn't a word in the book from Clunan that wasn't in a recording, okay? He says to Jack Clunan, That is the most dangerous man I've ever met. We cannot leave him on the street. And what does he do, Dr. Stan Fitzgerald, the general in the war on terror? He lets this man stay on the street until the bombs go off in Africa, killing these people. And now, they wait a month before they arrest him. And they arrest him in New York, and even when they arrested him, I have this little detail in my book, Jack Clunan actually told me this. He admitted this. They grab Ali in a hotel room in New York, and what do you do normally when you arrest a guy? You grab him, you cuff him right away, right? You slam him down on the ground, you cuff him, right? They let him go into the bathroom, and he flushed important information down the toilet. He later told them, including Dr. Ayman al-Zawahiri, I had a contact in Switzerland that would have been very useful, and they let the guy go to the bathroom where he flushes evidence. You understand this is the best and the brightest we have? So now they put Ali Muhammad in what they call a John Doe warrant. They hide him effectively in the federal jail in Lower Manhattan, the MCC. In my opinion, why? Because they're terrified the media is going to find out about this guy. It's for the same reason I believe they discouraged him from testifying in the Day of Terror case in 94. He's a one-man 9/11 commission. He's a living witness to the incompetence of the FBI. They don't want this guy to be under the lights of the media, right?
Well, is it possible that he actually was a really working for them all this time, appearing to be a Al-Qaeda agent? Is it possible that they don't want the American people to know that they had people at the highest levels of Bin Laden's movement?
Dr. Stan, there are many people that have read my books who subscribe to what's known as the inside job theory of 9/11, that some people believe, I am not one of them, that 9/11 was created by elements in the U.S. government, okay? I do not believe that. Here's what I believe. And this is on the basis of 7.5 years of intense research, and if I find evidence to the contrary, I'll be the first one to admit it. But what I believe is that Al-Qaeda was what's known as the result of what's called blowback. And blowback is an intelligence term. It's an unintended consequence of a covert operation. Blowback, okay? And the unintended consequence of us supporting the Mujahideen against the Soviets, which was considered a good war during Reagan's administration. You know, the Iran-Contra was the bad war. This was the good war that had broad bipartisan support. That Charlie Wilson's war, the movie that came out with Tom Hanks and the book, you know, that was all like, he was a Democrat, okay? So the point is, it was considered a good thing to help the Mujahideen, as they call them, defeat the evil empire, okay? But what they didn't do was keep their eye on the ball, because as soon as they defeated the evil empire and the Soviets were dispatched in February of 1989, Osama bin Laden and al-Zawahiri and the company turned their attention on the West, on us, okay? We became the new Satan, okay? So bottom line was, Al-Qaeda is a absolutely real entity. I do not believe Al-Qaeda is a creation of the United States elements. I don't believe in the shadow government theory. But what I believe in is something actually more insidious and something I think we should be more fearful of. Because if there's a shadow government, then you can look, you can investigate it, you can find it, and you can root it out. What is more insidious is these federal officials like Fitzgerald who defend administrations. He worked for Bush's father. He worked for Clinton. He worked for George W. Now he's working for Obama. Okay? These guys transcend administrations, and they are in the cover-up business. They're in the business of making the FBI and the Justice Department look good no matter what. And they are in the business of not rewriting history. And one of them, one of the principals, is a guy who worked for Fitzgerald called Dieter Snell. And Dieter Snell was an assistant U.S. attorney in the Southern District. I make an incredibly compelling case that he received the evidence from the Philippines National Police in 1995 of the full-blown planes as missiles plot. I interviewed Rafi Garcia III, the Bill Gates of the Philippines, who de-encrypted Yusuf's laptop, who told me there were 7 targets. This is not some little small plane flying into the CIA, which is what the 9/11 Commission said, but in fact, the White House, the Pentagon, the CIA, a nuclear facility, the World Trade Center, the CIA headquarters in Langley, the Transamerica Tower in San Francisco, and the Sears Tower in Chicago.
You're talking about the Bojinka plot.
Yeah, but Bojinka was a separate plot, Dr. Stan. Bojinka was a completely unique plot.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back here.
All right.
Well, this is Dr. Stan. I guess it's Peter Lance who's done a fantastic amount of work tracking the story of Ali Muhammad, a fascinating story entitled Triple Cross. Now, Peter, before we go on, I want you to tell our listeners how they can get your website, how they can get copies of your book.
I really appreciate that, Dr. Stan. The name of the book is Triple Cross. My website is myname.com, Peter Lance, one word, .com. If you go to peterlance.com, you can click on either Amazon or Barnes & Noble. Now, this book sells on Amazon for $11.55, which is the price of a value meal supersized for two people at McDonald's, okay? And if you get this book, it will accomplish two things. Number one, you will have an absolute page-turning read, like a Clancy novel that's real. You'll be sending a message to, and you'll be sending a message to people like Patrick Fitzgerald, U.S. officials, who tried to kill the book, said, no, you can't kill a book in America, a book that's responsibly written that happens to criticize U.S. officials. And very few of us, Dr. Stan, have within our power to spend $11 or $12, I think Barnes & Noble charges $12.50, to spend that little amount of money to send a message. And also, if your viewers get the book, or listeners get the book, they will have knowledge. Knowledge is power. The only way we're going to reform the FBI is for citizens, that, like the people that listen to you, get educated and then contact their leaders in Washington and put pressure on the FBI to reform. Because the most terrifying thing of all the things I've uncovered, and I updated this in my book as recently as April, the FBI, in my opinion, has failed to reform. There are 6,000 of the 12,000 agents who are technically deal with counterterrorism. Guess how many, Dr. Stan, speak Arabic? Seven some and a half years after 9/11. Guess how many?
Not very many. I have no idea.
30 FBI agents. Now, listen to this. The FBI, until 9/11, had what was called a paper culture, a paper-driven culture. It was still holdover from Hoover. Everything was written down on paper. Now, I was able to do this book retrospectively. I mean, obviously, it's easier for a guy to go back after the fact than it is to be living it at the real moment. I understand that. But this FBI did not have a computer system that could do even what I did. What I did was I used FileMaker Pro, which is a database. I used Google. I used a Macintosh computer. And I created a database. I read 40,000 pages of trial transcripts of all the Southern District cases. I read every single book that was written on 9/11. And every time I came across an Islamic name, Mahmoud Abu Lima, Mahmoud, Mohammed, every variation on a name, Walid El-Nor, El-Nor, Mohammed El-Atras, Al-Atras, I put it into my database, a little FileMaker Pro database, and then I connected the dots, and my jaw was on the ground, because my little database, which is what I did, is called data mining, revealed what I put in these books. Now, the FBI, to this day, does not have that full capability, if you can believe it. They spent, I think, hundreds of millions of dollars on what was called a Trilogy virtual cage file system that they scrapped about 4 years ago. They then hired Lockheed Martin to come in and spend hundreds of millions more on a system called Sentinel. And as the last report, Sentinel will not be fully operational till 2010 at best. And they keep slipping all these deadlines. So you think to yourself, you know, you watch these movies like The Bourne Ultimatum, and of course that's about the CIA. But you watch these movies, even the Public Enemies this weekend, the movie that Michael Mann, my former boss, did about Dillinger, and it made it look like the FBI was able to do wiretaps in 1933. Absolutely ridiculous, okay? And the average FBI agent in the field, even if he has a BlackBerry, cannot access this information fully operationally, you know, in real time. So, and one of the most stunning quotes that I saw, this is in the New York Times of about 2 months ago. There was an article right after the meltdown on Wall Street, which Director Robert Mueller was being criticized by people on Capitol Hill. Why don't you put more agents on Wall Street? Why don't you do more white-collar crime, right? And Mueller was saying, well, since 9/11, we've had half of our 12,000 agents on terrorism. And one of the agents that was quoted, one of the counterterrorism agents, made a joke. And you know what the joke was? He said, there's a joke around the FBI that those of us who work counterterrorism are the most fit. We look the best because we get the most gym time. Meaning, as if to say, there's nothing going on when it comes to terrorism, so we get all this gym time, you know, time in the gym. You see what I'm saying? Now, here's the question. Is it that there isn't a terror threat to America, or is it that they're incompetent to detect the threat? You know, in my opinion, that's what's going on. You saw this case recently, Dr. Stan, in New York, where they wrapped up this so-called cell, where they supposedly sold a Stinger missile. Had these guys had a Stinger missile. That was a bunch of Islamic guys hanging around a mosque, wannabe, anti-American types, no connection to Al-Qaeda whatsoever. And the undercover agents created that entire case. They're the ones that offered them this stuff. Do you think those guys could have done any damage on their own? No. Now let's cut to Patrick Fitzgerald. His last great terrorism victory was a couple of years ago around Christmas time. Do you remember that the plot to, he uncovers a plot in a suburban shopping center near Chicago, a mall, of a guy named Derek Sharif, who supposedly was going to blow up a mall during the holidays? Guess what? Derek Sharif was a lone wolf guy who was so poor, he literally had to pawn a radio to get the money to buy the grenades from the undercover agents. He was going to use grenades. That's the big terror plot, okay? Patrick Fitzgerald prosecuted that guy, and he got 25 years. And maybe he should have. I'm not saying he shouldn't. But none of this has anything to do with the Al-Qaeda threat to this country. And that's what terrifies me. My children live in New York. There's no doubt in my mind that they're going to come back. They're going to hit New York again. And they remain an incredibly lethal entity. Bin Laden, al-Zawahiri, the radical Egyptians that surround him. During the Bush years, they put out the word, oh, Al-Qaeda's been degraded. You know why they said that? Because they couldn't catch Bin Laden. And they tried to make it appear that Al-Qaeda had been degraded. They are as lethal as a Panzer division, Dr. Stan. And they remain an incredibly lethal threat. You start to look at some of these fatwas that they do. Dr. al-Zawahiri appears in these videos. It looks like he's at NBC News headquarters in New York. They have super graphics. They have, is he in a cave somewhere, or is he getting some help from a third-party government?
Well, of course, one of the interesting things is that al-Zawahiri was allowed. Here he is, of course. He's been involved with the murder of Anwar Sadat. He is wanted for murder by the Egyptian government. He's allowed to live in Europe. Why wouldn't somebody get a warrant and have him arrested in Europe? Then he comes to the United States in 1975.
In the mid-1990s, and Ali Mohammed takes him on a tour of the mosque.
And here's al-Zawahiri, who's working for the FBI, who's actually taking al-Zawahiri to mosques all over the country, including to Oklahoma, just about the time of the Oklahoma City bombing. A lot of this doesn't make sense. How could our officials be that incompetent unintentionally? But go right ahead.
Well, I'm going to try and find a section of my book. I have a chapter called The Red Crescent Tour that is all about this. And again, I ask your listeners to go to peterlance.com and lance.com, and you can, everything I'm telling you, before you even buy the book, you can download the timeline, you can download these documents that I'm referring to, but I'm trying to find the section in the book where they talk about this tour, and there were these two agents that worked in the Clinton administration that found out about this after the fact. Let me just see if I can find it. If not, I'll because I don't want to tie you up here. Oh, yeah, the FBI has it covered. Listen to this. Let me just read you a little section of my book. You don't mind? I'll make it brief. Okay?
You go right ahead.
Okay, this is page 200 of Triple Cross. In 1999, two members of President Clinton's NSC, National Security Council staff, Daniel Benjamin and Stephen Simon, met with FBI agents Michael Rollins and Stephen Jennings in a White House session aimed at synchronizing agency efforts against the Al-Qaeda threat. One of the NSC staffers had discovered intelligence in an old file describing al-Zawahiri's tour of the U.S. Quote, I couldn't believe it, he told the two agents. Did you know about that? Rollins and Jennings answered with wary nods. Well, he was here. If he was here, someone was handling his travel and arranging his meetings, and someone was giving him money, responded one of the White House aides. Do you know who these people are? Do you have them covered? Yeah, we know, the agents replied. Don't worry about it. We got it covered. Special Agent Rollins would come up again on the timeline of FBI negligence leading up to September 11th. In fact, Jack Clunan, this agent I told you about who I interviewed, a key player in the Bin Laden unit, told me that in his judgment, Rollins was one of six people who might have prevented the 9/11 attacks if they had simply done their jobs, quote-unquote. All right? We now know one of these special agents Rollins claimed was covering Ali Mohammed was the extraordinarily trusting John Zent. And Rollins was one of the guys involved after, Zacharias Moussaoui, the 20th terrorist, the 20th hijacker who wanted to learn how to fly a 747 but didn't care if he landed it? Remember that in Minnesota?
I remember him very well.
Okay, well, this heroic agent. And I want to emphasize something. For all the criticism I'm making of the FBI, I celebrate in my book the agents like Nancy Floyd and the agent I'm about to tell you about named Harry Salmon. I celebrate the good agents who tried to do their job in the midst of this bureaucratic nightmare of what they call management in the FBI. And this guy, Harry Salmon, was a hero. He was an ex-F-14 Navy pilot, okay? And he's now working as an FBI agent in Minneapolis, and they discover this guy, Massawi. Now, he frantically tried to get a FISA warrant to search his briefcase, okay? And he sends messages to Washington, and Rawlins and others basically blow this guy off, okay? And Harry Salmon, when they had the Zacharias Massawi trial, Harry Salmon accused his superiors in Washington of, quote, criminal negligence. This is an FBI agent. Talk about the guts to be able to accuse your boss as a criminal. But he was telling the truth.
I know, but that, of course, will end his career, of course.
Nancy Floyd, yeah, there's the same thing. And here, look at her career. And what message does that send, by the way, to the young agents who come out of Quantico, bright-eyed and bushy-tailed, wanting to do good for their country, when they see year after year, the farther along they get up the food chain, they look over, they have to keep looking over their shoulder more and more, maybe 5%, 10%. By the half time they're in 10 years, they're looking over their shoulder half the time, worried about office politics, as opposed to going out and getting the job done. Now, if this was a company that made widgets, who would care? If this was a company that made peanut butter, and it was office politics, I wouldn't care. This is an agency that is charged with protecting the homeland of America from these terrorists. And yet, you know, one of the agents that I interviewed who I love is a fantastic, heroic man named Len Prednishenkis. And he was Nancy Floyd's mentor. He was a Latvian emigre. He was one of the first agents that had a green card that became an FBI agent. This guy has a brag wall in his house that would blow your socks off, Dr. Stan. Okay? An incredible hero. He was the bulwark against the Soviets in New York for 20 years. You know what he told me the day I interviewed him? He said, Peter, there are two great days in your career in the FBI. The first day is your Quantico, you get your badge from the director, you know, when you first become an agent. And I said, what's the second day? He goes, when you're one day after 20 years, and it's called your KMA date. I said, what's that mean? It means kiss my, you know what, I'm not going to say it on your program because you have many religious listeners. But you know what I'm saying, KMA, kiss my, you know what. And I said, well, I don't understand KMA, what are you talking about? He says, because that's the day that if they try and open an OPR investigation on me, I could put my papers in and retire before they do. Now, I want you to ask yourself, what agency, in the name of the Lord and all that's holy, what agency do you actually work for that you put in 20 years of your life, and you're still living in fear of being set up on an internal affairs investigation? That is the FBI, okay? And that pathology that comes from the time of J. Edgar Hoover, that fear, by the way, the street agents who are known as brick agents, the Len Prednishenkis, the Nancy Floyds, the Harry Samets of the world, okay, the good agents who are trying to do good, they are the victims of what's known as management, okay? Management. And Len said, you know how you become a manager in the FBI, Peter? I said, how? He goes, raise your hand. Volunteer. Okay? And once they become managers, they take on a completely different mindset, which is about CYA, and you know what I'm talking about. And that's what's wrong with this agency. That's what's so terribly wrong and why we need to reform it. And Justice Brandeis, Louis Brandeis, once said, sunlight is the best disinfectant. We need a truth commission, Dr. Stan. Not a truth commission, as Senator Leahy said, modeled on the 9/11 commission. Oh, my gosh, no, because the 9/11 commission was half of the staff were alumni of the very agency that were supposed to be auditing, and that's why they found no one has ever been held accountable for 9/11. Osama bin Laden has never been indicted. We know that Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, the uncle of Ramzi Youssef, was the titular, quote, mastermind, but Youssef was the true mastermind. His uncle merely carried out the plot that Youssef designed that the feds knew about in 1995 because the Philippines police reported on it. I started to say earlier that Rafael Garcia III, this computer expert, revealed to me that they de-encrypted Youssef's laptop. The Bojinka plot, completely separate. There was a plot to kill the Pope, and it was going to be in Manila in January of 95, and the third plot was 9/11. And I interviewed a guy named Sam Carmelowitz. Excuse me, I have to take a drink. I talk nonstop. All right, hold on. All right. Sam Carmelowitz is a
diplomatic security agent, okay? Dr. Stan, go read Triple Cross, go to peterlance.com, get the book, get the timeline. This is a guy who's a diplomatic security agent. His job is to guard the embassy in Manila. And he took the evidence from the Philippines National Police and he brought it to the embassy and he saw the legal attaché of the FBI address it to the Southern District in New York, okay? Now that guy retired. He gave an interview to a reporter named Alexander Coburn who had an online magazine called Counterpunch. And he basically said that he believed that Dietrich Snell and Mike Garcia got the information. They worked under Fitzgerald, okay? Now, I wrote about him in Triple Cross. You know, he called me a couple of weeks ago, and you know what he told me, Dr. Stan?
What did he tell you?
My book came out in November of 06. Sometime in the spring, this guy was set up on trumped-up charges, and his life has been a pure hell ever since. And it all went back to his statement to the guy in Counterpunch, which was then elaborated on in my book. So they go after these guys that tell the truth, and they try and ruin them, okay?
All right, now, for our listeners out there, what was really so important that they would go after this man? Because, of course, the FBI knew that they were going to use airplanes to attack the World Trade Center. There were seven targets, and one of them was the World Trade Center, another was the Capitol of Sears building, and Chicago, the Trans-American building, and in California. It was all laid out. They knew, and they cannot let the American people know the truth. Go ahead.
And that's why, if you will, Patrick Fitzgerald tried to bury my book. And I think we need to spend a few minutes on that as the program winds down. Because
go right ahead, because we've only got a few minutes to go. So
all right.
Go ahead.
Patrick Fitzgerald, in October, my book had been out, the hardcover had been out for 11 months. And the trade paperback was about to come out in the fall of 97. Patrick Fitzgerald sends a 9-page letter to HarperCollins demanding that any hardcovers within their control be destroyed and that the paperback never see the light of day, threatens to sue for libel. He is rejected, and his 32 pages of threat letters can be downloaded at peterlance.com. Go right to the main homepage. You'll see media coverage for Fitzgerald threat letter. You can download all this. Mark Jackson, the heroic counsel for HarperCollins at the time, rejected him. He called my book an important work of investigative journalism. Sorry, Pat. You know, that's it. You know, what does Fitzgerald do? Sends a second letter. This time he faxes it. At the top of each page, it says, Office U.S. Attorney, Chicago. Okay? As if to send a message of who, even though he claimed that this is a personal issue with him, he was using the color of his office to intimidate my publisher, in my opinion. So,
hold that thought. Hold that thought, Peter Lance. Yeah. We'll be right back in just a moment. There are obviously people, very powerful people, who do not want the American people to hear the truth. Go right ahead, Peter. We've got 3 minutes to wrap up the program.
All right, very quickly.
Heart disease is on the rise. Clogged arteries, high blood pressure, and high cholesterol levels may not be fully detected by you, but the symptoms are there. Loss of energy, blood sugar spikes and drops, poor circulation, and irregular heartbeat are just a few of these that can alert you that something is wrong. Hear how Heart and Body Extract is making a difference in thousands of people's lives across America.
My blood pressure has normalized. My diabetes has totally improved.
Everyone is telling me now how much healthier I look, and I'm telling everyone how much healthier I feel. I recommend Heart and Body Extract to everyone.
Anybody over 40 in the North American continent should be using this product as a preventative to keep their cardiovascular system healthy.
Order your 2-month supply today by calling 866-295-5305. That's 866-295-5305. Or order online, hbextract.com. Heart and Body Extract, 866-295-5305 or hbextract.com.
In these times of falling values, high unemployment, loss of income, and with hyperinflation on its way, we have created a 1-ounce silver coin with a cross and the words of John 3:16 on one side and the American Eagle on the other. These coins are mural finished, 0.999 silver. Each of these beautiful coins will always have an earthly store of value plus the cross with John 3:16 as an eternal value. Go to www.john316coin.com and call 1-877-316-COIN while supplies last. Order these beautiful 1-ounce John 316 American Eagle coins today by going to john316coin.com. and calling 1-877-316-COIN.
This is Pastor David Whitney with Institute on the Constitution. Our founders constructed this constitutional republic with the intent that citizens would function as the final check on the power of civil government. But that design would only work if the citizens understood our form of government as well as their responsibilities within that structure. That's why Institute on the Constitution has put together a host kit that enables anyone, anywhere, with any group of people to instruct them on our founding documents. We urge you to order a host kit. You can call us toll free at 866-730-9796. That's 866-730-9796. Or you can order it on the web. Go to our website, iotconline.com. The only way our republic will survive is if its citizens arm themselves with the knowledge of our founding fathers' original intent of the Constitution, the Declaration, and the Bill of Rights. Call us, 866-730-9796.
We went into the background of a lot of the characters and people that were involved, but I really, in my own mind, could not believe that the government had intentionally brought those buildings down. And now, of course, we have four tape sets. We have one four tape set is why did the buildings come down? We have another four tape set on 911. What really happened on 911? There you'll hear an interview with Laura Chavez, who was a sergeant in the military at CENTCOM, military headquarters in Tampa, Florida, on the day of the attack. And what happened on 911? Well, you'll actually understand that. Basically, there were all sorts of military exercises this morning. There was a stand-down order from Dick Cheney that the Air Force was not to respond and try to stop those planes from crashing into the buildings. Why did the buildings come down? Interviews with William Rodriguez, who was there that morning, who heard the explosions before the plane hit the North Tower. William Rodriguez was the last person out of the building. He's been threatened, as has everybody else who's tried to bring out the truth. Now we know that they took testimonies, recorded testimonies from over 500 firemen who were there that day. Over 150 of them heard the explosions in the buildings. If you have not yet seen Richard Gage's excellent DVD on the architects and engineers for 911 Truth, you can go certainly call in and ask for Richard Gage's DVD on 911. We have about five DVDs on 911 that we offer as a special 911 special. There's no question that the government brought those buildings down. Now, who in the government? How did they do it? Well, we know that Building 7 was a controlled demolition because it came down at 5:20 in the evening. If you watch the DVD, and you can see it on my website under other videos, just go to the one that covers building number seven. And of course, with the controlled demolition, the first thing that happens is the center of the roof caves in. Then the base of the building goes. That's how you get the building to collapse in its own shadow. And if you watch Building 7 come down half a dozen times or a dozen times if I have, you realize it was a controlled demolition. If they lied to us about Building 7, then everything we've been told is a lie. You'll certainly want to get Why Did the Buildings Come Down, or an excellent four-tape set. 911, what really happened. You'll want to get our pamphlets on, certainly on prior knowledge, and then, of course, we have another pamphlet that gives you the background of how they brought the buildings down. Certainly, Michael Rupert has written about this. They threatened his life. They tried to poison him. He's living in hiding in Canada today. Jimmy, I think, is Walker. Jimmy Walter is a multimillionaire who spent over $8 million of his own money running ads in the New York Times and on New York television, pointing out that the Twin Towers were an obvious demolition. Why, of course, Jimmy Walters was threatened attempts on his life. He's living in hiding in Europe today. These are stories that you're not going to hear elsewhere. Certainly you'll need to get our material. Go to our website, RadioLiberty.com. I suggest if you're only going to get one thing, get Richard Gage's DVD on Architects and Engineers for What Really Happened on September 11th. Certainly they knew there was a plot, and they utilized these people. Were they on the plane? I don't know. And I don't know how they brought the buildings down, but I do know they were controlled demolition. Our number, 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. 1,100 bodies simply vaporized. No sign of them. 1,100 bodies were vaporized. What happened to them? No one knows. Please pray for Radio Liberty.